Your immune system plays two vital roles in your body. First, it responds to foreign organisms by producing antibodies and stimulating specialized cells, which destroy those organisms or neutralize their toxic products. In this manner, it defends against foreign invaders, germs, viruses, bacteria, and the like. And second, it stands guard over the cells of your body to ensure that they are not abnormal or degenerating. It's worth noting that normally, there are anywhere between 100 to 10,000 abnormal cells floating around in your bodies at any point in time. In many ways, your immune system is the most awesome system in your body, easily rivaling your brain in terms of complexity, subtlety, and self-awareness. Just a sample of the things your immune system does includes, well, for one, your immune system is capable of identifying every single cell in your body and recognizing each and every one as friendly. Conversely, it's capable of singling out and identifying foreign invaders ranging from bacteria to viruses to fungi and parasites. Once it's identified an invader, your immune system then quickly develops a customized defense weapon that specifically targets the invader's weak spot. Then it gets even better. Having designed the specific weapon required, your immune system then begins building factories that produce these weapons in massive quantities sufficient to totally crush an invader. And once the invader has been defeated, the immune system has the awareness to shut itself down, to go, as they say in the military, from DEFCON 5 to DEFCON 1. And as amazing as all of this is, we haven't yet come to the three most amazing aspects of the immune system, the aspects that highlight its intelligence. First, once it has defeated an invader, your immune system remembers that invader and the defense that was used to defeat it. If that invader ever makes another appearance, even decades later, your immune system can launch its defense instantly. Even more amazing, however, is the fact that your immune system can identify when a cell in your body has changed, has gone over to the enemy, as it were. This is stunning sophistication. Out of all the trillions of cells in your body, your immune system can tell when one single cell has mutated and become cancerous, and in most cases move in and destroy it before it can do any harm. In fact, it does this thousands of times a day. And then, most amazing of all, your immune system is in total communication with each and every part of itself. So what's the big deal, you might ask? The brain does the same thing. Yes, but remember, the billions and billions in cells of the immune system are not in physical contact with each other. To paraphrase Einstein, at its core, the immune system resembles nothing so much as a great thought. In the next few minutes, I'm going to try and summarize the functioning of your immune system. In reality, a full discussion would take several semesters just to clarify the limited amount that we know about it at this point in time. Nevertheless, what I'd like to do is at least give you a brief summary, a sense, if you will, a context for how this marvelous system works. So let's start by talking about some of the key components of your immune system. All blood cells, both red and white, begin as stem cells in your bone marrow. These undifferentiated cells begin to assume individual characteristics and become either red cells, the oxygen carriers in your blood, or white cells, the cells of the immune system. Further differentiation divides the white cells, also called leukocytes, into four main types of cells, and these are lymphocytes, phagocytes, granulocytes, and dendritic cells. Lymphocytes are small white blood cells that serve as the key operatives of the immune system. In a healthy body, not under attack, they number about 1 trillion. There are three main classes of lymphocytes, and these are, one, the B cells. Each B cell is programmed to make one specific antibody to defend against one specific invader. An antibody, incidentally, is a soluble protein produced by the B cells that's capable of binding to and destroying or neutralizing one specific foreign substance, also called an antigen, in the body. Antibodies belong to a particular family of 9 proteins called the immunoglobulins. Anyway, once a B cell encounters the particular invader that it's built to defend against, it produces many large plasma cells. Plasma cells are nothing less than factories that produce millions and millions and millions of specific antibodies and release them into the bloodstream. The second class of lymphocytes are the T cells. T cells are smarter than B cells. They've been to school, as it were. After being produced in the bone marrow, T cells make their way to the thymus, where they're educated. No kidding. Educated in how to distinguish between the cells of the body and invading cells, and to distinguish between normal healthy cells and mutated rogue cells. T cells that cannot make this distinction are eliminated at this point, so they do not make their way into the body and begin attacking it. Also part of the T cell class are the T helper cells, which identify foreign invaders, then activate B cells, other T cells, natural killer cells, and macrophages to attack the invader. In addition, there are the T8 cells, also known as cytotoxic T cells or suppressor cells, which identify rogue mutated cells in the body and cells that have been invaded by viruses and compromised. Once they've identified the enemy, cytotoxic T cells attack the body cells that have been infected or are malignant and destroy them. Anyway, that's it for the second class of lymphocytes, the T cell group. The third class of lymphocytes are the natural killer or NK cells, which attack a whole range of microbes in addition to tumor cells. Like cytotoxic T cells, they kill enemy cells on contact by delivering lethal bursts of potent granular chemicals that burn holes in target cells, causing them to leak and burst. As I mentioned earlier, there are four types of white cells. We've just covered the lymphocytes. That leaves the phagocytes, which are the large white cells that eat and digest, primarily through enzyme activity, invading pathogens. There are several kinds of phagocytes, and these are the monocytes, neutrophils, and macrophages. Macrophages in particular are especially fascinating and have a number of functions in the immune system. Not only do they attack foreign invaders, they also play a key role as scavengers by eating up worn-out cells and other waste in the body. And finally, once macrophages have digested an invader, they then present the key identifying molecules or antigens to the T cells to initiate the immune response. Incidentally, it's the macrophages that play a key role when you're fasting. When you're not eating and creating new waste in the body, macrophages get a chance to get ahead of the game in terms of cleaning up the debris. In effect, fasting time becomes spring cleaning for macrophages. The third type of white cells are the granulocytes, which includes things like the eosinophils, basophils, and neutrophils, and mast cells. Granulocytes destroy invaders by releasing granules filled with potent chemicals. And finally, there are the dendritic cells, which are characterized by long, thread-like tentacles that are used to wrap up not only antigens, but expended lymphocytes and carry them to the lymph nodes for removal from the body. Anyway, those are the basic cells of the immune system. Now let's take a look at the organs of the immune system. Actually, we've already discussed two key organs, the bone marrow, which produces the cells of the immune system, and the thymus, which trains the T cells. Other key organs include the lymph nodes, the spleen, the tonsils and adenoids, and the appendix. Although you can survive without some of these organs, they are vital and non-replaceable. Removal of any seriously compromises the immune system. The spleen, for example, serves as both a staging area for the white cell defenders and as a blood filtration plant for removing worn-out blood cells. Removal of the spleen leaves one highly susceptible to infection. Even the tonsils and adenoids are not without unique value. There's some evidence to indicate that the only organs in the body that can produce a defense against polio are the tonsils and adenoids. If true, removal of these organs in children would make them more susceptible to polio. Now, we also need to talk about the complementary immune system. At a certain point, when the macrophage immune system is totally overwhelmed, the complementary immune system kicks in. The secondary system is comprised of approximately 25 proteins/enzymes that activate in a cascading sequence and end with what's called the membrane attack complex. As its name implies, this complex attacks the cell walls or membranes of invaders. A secondary function of the complementary immune system is to help rid the body of CICs. Remember the circulating immune complexes we learned about in our earlier discussion of enzymes. If the overload on the complementary immune system is great enough, severe inflammation of tissues caused by the activity of albumins can result. The bottom line is that the body's tissue literally begins to attack itself, which is another way of saying we now have an autoimmune disorder. Okay, now we have a sense of how the immune system works, how it identifies invaders and mounts a response. But how in the world does it communicate with itself? The answer lies in a set of powerful chemical messengers secreted by the cells of the immune system called cytokines. You've probably heard of several of these cytokines, including interferon and tumor necrosis factor, but it is the cytokines called interleukins which swarm through the body like billions of tiny messengers serving to, well, activate the B cells and T cells, train immune cells, promote the rapid growth of trained defenses, and then shut down defenses when the threat is gone, and control the inflammation response. In short, they provide a remarkable set of intelligent checks and balances on the immune system, guiding it, training it, regulating it, marshaling it as required, and testing when no longer needed. So that's the immune system. But what can we do with this information? How can we use it to improve the functioning of our immune systems? will understand that whenever T cells or B cells become activated by an invader, some of those cells become memory cells. That is, they encode a memory of the particular antigen or protein associated with that invader so that the next time they encounter the same antigen, the immune system can respond without delay. There are a number of factors that affect the level of immune response we're capable of mounting. Genetics certainly plays a role. Some individuals are just born with a stronger immune system than others. Diet, lifestyle, and environment can also enhance or erode the immune system. In addition, strength of immune response and the duration of immune memory are strongly influenced by the type of antigen involved and how much of it originally entered the body. When we're born, we have weak immune systems. Whatever immunity we have is given to us by our mothers. Almost immediately, however, assuming that we're nursing, that immunity begins to grow. The first milk we receive from mother is, in fact, not actually milk. It's a substance called colostrum, whose primary purpose is to jack up our immunity. Colostrum is packed with natural immune boosters, such as lactoferrin, alkylglycerols, and transfer factor. We'll talk more about these later. In addition, as we discussed in our talk on intestinal bacteria, nursing helps build the probiotic cultures in the digestive tract, which also helps to build our immune systems. Children that are put on formula are denied these benefits. Not only are formula-fed children more liable to experience colic and ear infections and cold, etc., but there's significant evidence that for the most part, their immune systems never fully catch up. Anyway, one of the things that we can do to help build our immune systems comes from the medical tradition. In the wisdom of modern medicine, we've created vaccines to pre-build memory for our immune systems of significant diseases we've never had, such as measles, mumps, polio, diphtheria, and smallpox, etc. Vaccines contain a weakened, sterilized version of microorganisms or proteins from these microorganisms that are capable of producing an immune response in the body without inducing a full-blown onset of the disease itself. Although vaccines have played a significant role in helping reduce the number of deaths among children, this benefit has not come without cost. I'm not going to dwell on this issue because I have a strong emotional attachment to it, which makes it impossible for me to be objective. My youngest brother was one of those small percentage of children who responded badly to the series of three shots he received back in the early 60s. Each time he received one of these shots, he ran a high fever and cried all night. The last time, literally screaming for several hours. Each time, my mother called the pediatrician, who reassured her that it was nothing to worry about. As it turns out, he was wrong. My brother, along with thousands of other children, had an allergic reaction to the shots. Each shot caused a small brain hemorrhage, ultimately leaving him severely retarded. Although the manufacturer of the vaccine had indications that this was a possibility, they had not made it clear to the pediatricians who used it. This sort of reaction to a vaccine and this sort of irresponsibility by a pharmaceutical company are not as anomalous as you might think. The percentage of children who have adverse reactions may be small, but unfortunately, even a small percentage when applied to a large number still equals thousands of children. Another problem is that before 1990, doctors were not legally obligated to report adverse reactions to vaccines to the Center for Disease Control. And even with the current legal obligation, it's estimated that only 10% of doctors report the damage they see. But problems with vaccines are not limited to just the triple shot. The polio vaccine that was given to children in the 50s and 60s was not as sterilized as originally thought. In fact, when better test equipment was later used, it was found that there were over 140 live viruses in those early versions of the polio vaccine. With what result? Well, for one thing, one of those viruses, SV40, is strongly implicated in brain cancer. Further, Jonas Salk testified before a Senate subcommittee that since 1961, except for a few importations from other countries, all cases of polio were caused by the oral polio vaccine. In fact, there's strong evidence that the original polio epidemic itself in the late 1940s was caused by another vaccine. The early triple vaccine against diphtheria, whooping cough, and tetanus has been shown beyond doubt to cause paralytic polio in some children to whom it was administered. The incidence of polio in children vaccinated with a shot was statistically greater than in unvaccinated children. The scandal broke in Britain during 1949, an epidemic year for polio. Other reports soon followed from Australia. Still not convinced? In 1986, the federal government set up a national vaccine injury compensation program to compensate vaccine-injured victims. To date, more than $663 million has been paid out. And just as a final note, in addition to the active part of the vaccine includes substances such as ethylene glycol, that's antifreeze, formaldehyde, a known carcinogen, and aluminum. Look, I'm not saying vaccines should be eliminated, just that we should use a little more discrimination than we're using at the moment. Eventually, it's possible that new techniques of genetic engineering, by being able to totally isolate the offending antigen, may be able to offer a safer form of vaccine. But until that day, choose carefully. So, beyond the vaccines, what problems can occur with the immune system? Well, sometimes the immune system is overwhelmed by too many invaders, or it can become weakened and vulnerable to attack. Sometimes the immune system becomes misprogrammed and loses the ability to identify invaders and mutated cells. And sometimes the immune system becomes misprogrammed and begins to mistakenly identify healthy body cells as the enemy and begins to attack them. And finally, sometimes the immune system is compromised or missing some key component at birth. Of these problems, the first four are in most cases correctable. Only when the body is born without the ability to produce a key component are our options truly limited. Since the purpose of the body's immune system is to defend against attack and help initiate repair, the better it does it, the healthier we are. To facilitate this process, we need to address the two key areas of immune function we've already identified. One, we have to improve overall immune function to allow the body to better defend itself. And two, we need to specifically target, that is, kill or destroy invading bacteria, viruses, microorganisms, and other related pathogens to assist the immune system, as it were. Scientists have known for years that it's possible to improve the functioning of the immune system. Here in the United States, the approach has been to use expensive proprietary drugs. Current favorites include concentrated cytokines such as interleukin and interferon. The rest of the world, on the other hand, has adopted a more natural approach by seeking to use natural substances to, one, stimulate and strengthen your immune system, to fight infection, to strengthen tissue against assault by invading microorganisms, to stimulate macrophage capability, increase T-cell production, and protect T-helper cells, to complement the action of interferon and interleukin-1, and to assist the cell-mediated immune response. Surprisingly, not only are the natural immune boosters far safer than the drug approach, having far fewer side effects, they also are far more powerful than their pharmaceutical counterparts. Let's take a look at some of the more powerful immune boosters available to us. First, we'll look at the herbal boosters, then a couple of other options that are available. Echinacea is truly a miracle herb. For one thing, it contains echinacoside, a natural antibiotic comparable to penicillin in effect that can kill a broad range of viruses, bacteria, fungi, and protozoa, which makes it invaluable in wound healing and in the treatment of infectious diseases. Research has also reported echinacea's efficacy in treating colds, flu, bronchitis, tuberculosis, and infections, etc. Echinacea also contains echinacea, a biochemical that protects against germ attack by neutralizing the tissue-dissolving enzyme hyaluronidase, produced by many germs. Also, studies such as one published in Infection and Immunology show that echinacea contains substances that boost the ability of your body's macrophages to destroy germs. And other studies from the University of Munich have shown that echinacea extracts boost T-cell production by as much as 30% more than immune-boosting drugs. Another powerful immune-boosting herb is pau de arco. Pau de arco comes from the rainforests of Brazil and other areas of South America. This amazing herb nourishes the body's defense system and helps protect against pathogenic organisms. It's been used for centuries to improve immune function, detoxify, and reduce pain throughout the body, especially in the joints. Research has shown that it contains a natural antibacterial agent, has a healing effect on the entire body, cleanses the blood, and kills viruses. Pau de arco has been used as treatment for AIDS, allergies, all infections and inflammations, anemia, asthma, arthritis, arteriosclerosis, as a blood builder, for bronchitis, all types of cancer, candida, colitis, cystitis, smoker's cough, diabetes, eczema, fistulas, gastritis, gonorrhea, hemorrhages, hernias, Hodgkin's disease, liver disease, leukemia, lupus, multiple sclerosis, osteomyelitis, Parkinson's disease, polyps, prostatitis, psoriasis, rheumatism, skin cancer, skin sores, spleen infections, snake bites, ulcers, varicose veins, warts, and plain old wounds. It's a powerful, powerful immune booster. Another key herb is suma. Natives of the Amazon jungle have used suma for at least the last 300 years. It wasn't until 1975, however, that suma was introduced to the 20th century and tested at the University of Sao Paulo, Brazil. The studies conducted by Dr. Milton Brazac concluded that although it was not a cure, it nevertheless brought significant relief for cancer, diabetes, and gout sufferers with no undesirable side effects. Since then, studies at the American College of the Healing Arts by Dr. Milton Torreira, author of The Way of Herbs, indicated that consistent use of soma may help combat fatigue, including treatment of chronic fatigue and low energy conditions, prevent colds and flus, speed healing, regulate blood sugar, and stimulate the sex drive. The key working ingredients in soma are phaphic acid, which prevents the spread of various cell disorders, phaphosides and other saponins, which help stop diseases already in progress, the plant hormones, cystosterol and stigmasterol, which prevent cholesterol absorption and improve blood circulation, allantoin, which helps accelerate healing, and most important of all, germanium. Soma is one of the highest concentrations of GE-132 of any plant known. What's the big deal with GE-132? It was actually discovered about 20 years ago by a Japanese research chemist named Katsuhiko Asai. Its full name is bis-carboxyethylgermanium sesquioxide, or germanium sesquioxide for short. According to studies by Dr. Paris Kidd, this substance, while free of major side effects, can apparently invigorate, rejuvenate, restore sexual function, protect against miscarriages during pregnancy, heal burns without scarring, cure radiation sickness, restore eyesight and hearing, kill the pain of advanced cancer, and shrink cancers within weeks. Circulatory disorders, including heart attacks, angina pectoris, stroke, and peripheral impairments respond well to GE-132, as do hepatitis and cirrhosis and several behavior orders. Next, the medicinal mushrooms. Many of the compounds found in reishi, maitake, and cordyceps mushrooms are classified as host defense potentiators. It is believed that the combination of these compounds target and strengthen the human immune system, as well as aid in neuron transmission, metabolism, hormonal balance, and the transport of nutrients and oxygen. Through a host-mediated, or T-cell immune mechanism, they help the body regulate the development of lymphoid stem cells and other important defense responses. Specifically, the anti-cancer and immune-enhancing effects of the reishi mushroom are thought to be largely due to the presence of polysaccharides. Reishi mushrooms are high in mucopolysaccharides, which your body incorporates into cellular membranes, making them resistant to viruses and pathogenic bacteria. The polysaccharides also appear to activate the macrophages, which, as we've mentioned earlier, are a type of white blood cell that consumes viruses, bacteria, and other large particulate matter. Maitake mushrooms, on the other hand, have a very high concentration of a unique polysaccharide compound called beta-1,6-glucan, which researchers now consider to be one of the most powerful immune stimulants and adaptogens known. A research study reported in the Chemical Pharmaceutical Bulletin of 1988 showed that maitake produced a 64% inhibition of breast cancer and tumor activity and a 75% inhibition of skin cancer and tumor activity. Also, laboratory studies conducted at the U.S. National Cancer Institute and the Japanese National Institute of Health showed that maitake extract kills the human immunodeficiency virus, that's HIV, and enhances the activity of T helper cells. Research has demonstrated that maitake stimulates a variety of different immune cells, including macrophages, NK cells, THTC, and TDH cells. And not only does it stimulate the production of these immune cells, but increases their efficiency and effectiveness by increasing the production of interleukin-1, interleukin-2, and lymphokines. As we've already talked about, these are the chemicals that your body normally produces to stimulate the body's immune responses and to help target foreign substances. Maitake has been confirmed to have a multifaceted benefit for cancer and tumors. It protects healthy cells from becoming cancerous. It prevents the spread of cancer, that is, metastasis. It stops or slows the growth of tumors. It works in conjunction with chemotherapies by lessening their negative side effects. One study reported 90% lessening of side effects from chemo, including reduced hair loss, pain, and nausea. Now, the third mushroom that we're going to talk about is cordyceps, which has properties similar to those of ginseng and has been used to strengthen and rebuild the body after exhaustion or long-term illness. It's also been used traditionally for impotence, neurasthenia, and backache. Recent research with extracts of cordyceps has yielded a protein-bound polysaccharide with high oral activity against tumors, as well as immunological enhancement. Cordyceps is one of the most valued medicinal fungi in all Chinese medicine, and also one of the most expensive, costing as much as $249 per kilo. Cordyceps is widely employed to treat upper respiratory problems, impotence, weakened immune systems, and by athletes to increase endurance. Now let's talk about some of those natural substances that, in addition to boosting the immune system, reduce its workload by directly destroying invaders. First and foremost is garlic. Garlic is one of the best infection fighters available for both bacterial and viral infections. One of its many ingredients, allicin, is a natural antibiotic that does not appear to create resistant bacteria strains. In addition, Fresh garlic extract has been shown to be deadly to many viruses. Incidentally, the same component that gives garlic its strong odor is the one that destroys or inhibits various bacteria and fungi. The component is allicin, and when crushed, combines with the enzyme alanase and results in antibacterial action equivalent to 1% penicillin. Garlic also possesses the ability to stimulate the activity of the macrophages, which engulf foreign organisms such as viruses, bacteria, and yeast. Furthermore, garlic increases the activity of the T helper cells, and garlic may be particularly effective in treating upper respiratory viral infections due to its immune-enhancing properties and its ability to clear mucus from the lungs. And finally, garlic is also effective against strep and staph bacteria. Another substance worth talking about is alkyglycerol, which is naturally manufactured in the body and also found in mother's milk, the liver, the spleen, and bone marrow. The alkyglycerols play a major role in the production and stimulation of white blood cells. They also help to normalize bone marrow function. The immune supportive effect of alkyglycerols helps our bodies protect against bacterial, fungal, and viral infections. The most potent source of AKGs in the world is shark liver oil. Lactoferrin, one of the cytokines produced in the human body, is another powerful immune booster. It's found anywhere that's especially vulnerable to attack, such as the gut, eyes, ears, nose, throat, urinary tract, etc. Lactoferrin has been shown to inhibit virus replication, including both the AIDS and herpes virus. It inhibits tumor growth and metastasis. It's directly toxic to both bacteria and yeast and is therefore invaluable in helping prevent bacterial and candida overgrowth in the gut, and it activates neutrophil cells. Supplementation with lactoferrin or organic bovine colostrum, which contains lactoferrin, can significantly boost the immune system and or help the body recover from any existing infection. So what are my bottom line recommendations? As we've already discussed, supplementing with digestive enzymes significantly reduces the incidence of circulating immune complexes, thus taking enormous stress off the complementary immune system. So supplement with enzymes with every meal and in the evening before going to bed. 2. Daily use of formulations comprised of the herbs discussed in this talk has been proven to significantly enhance the immune system across the board, even in the face of aggressive chemotherapy. Then, periodic supplementation of substances such as alkyglycerol and lactoferrin also makes sense since they help boost the immune system, but from a different direction. And finally, the primary entry point for most pathogens is via the eyes, nose, and mouth through contact with the hands. Keep in mind that the hands pick up potential threats by virtue of contact with other people, shaking hands, for example, and through contact with objects such as doorknobs and telephones. Regular washing of the hands throughout the day, not with regular soap, but with an effective antibacterial and antiviral soap, can help serve to take a considerable amount of stress off the immune system. Well, that's it for part 12 of the Take Back Your Health series. In the next part, we're going to talk about the mind-body connection. It truly is the thought that kills.